Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. This is Melissa Bilardi, your host on Help for HD. We are online, live, and podcasting all about help for Huntington's disease. Every Monday, I'm going to introduce incredible special guests to inspire, educate, and inform you all about what's going on in our HD world, and we are recording for later listening. We give special thanks today to Lundbeck, Inc. for bringing us Xenazine, the first FDA-approved drug for chorea associated with Huntington's disease, and for supporting Help for HD. Thanks and props to my producer, BJ, who is queuing in calls for us right now from Minnesota. Also, thanks to Blog Talk Radio and Citizen Broadcasting for providing this format. And thank you, our 3,600 listeners now. Without you, we would not have a show. Please call into the show to ask questions on two phone lines, 310-982-4227, and our toll-free is 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1 and BJ will cue you into the show. Please tell all your friends and family about the show and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming shows. Our incredible special guest tonight is Jonathan Dickinson. He has a very important message for us about hope, possibility, overcoming, and vision, which he so eloquently illustrates in his epic film, Father Spirit, about he and his pops who together journey through India and the Himalayas by motorcycle. Check out his teaser clips on this website, fatherspirit.org, Facebook, and YouTube. We're going to talk about the real reason for doing the film. Welcome to the show, Jonathan. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Melissa. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're welcome. We're very excited about this show. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your life growing up.
Well, you know, it's my dad's disease. You know, had a real impact on a number of things, but one of the things that I learned pretty early on was that you know, just how to draw him out. And you know, when he started to get sick, it was harder to reach him and to really draw him out and get him to express and sort of just to track with me and get him to understand what we were doing. And I think that in a lot of ways, and I mean, Huntington's disease is a real challenge, but one of the things that it really forges a person, you know, it to a large extent, it was one of the most formative factors in my development. It really made me who I am.
Now, you had an experience, you're an Eagle Scout, and you had an experience one time, and you wanted to share kind of a metaphor and analysis about, or analogy about what happened with you while you were on a run. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I will. I'll tell you about that. I was on a hiking trip one time with some of my other scouts, and we were coming back down from Elliott's Knob, and it was a pretty long hike, and I was coming up to the end of it. And I was sort of running with some of the older boys. I was younger, and I was keeping pace with them as well as I could. And we were moving along, but and eventually I kind of got worn out. We were getting closer to the camp, Camp Shenandoah, where we had started, and I kind of thought I knew where I was. I thought I had things under control. So I slowed down a step or two and figured I would just sort of wait for the younger guys and the adult leaders to catch up to us. And as I was walking, I came to a fork in the road, and you know, I thought that I ought to go left. But as it turns out, left wasn't right.
Oh dear.
So I was walking along, and the trail kind of petered out, and you know, I didn't know what was going on anymore, and I tried to retrace my steps, and I couldn't. I didn't know, you know, which way to go, and I was lost.
Mm-hmm.
So as the tears started to fall, I was kind of beside myself, and you know, I didn't know whether or not to go left, right, or straight, and then I saw through the trees this flash of red, and my heart leapt. It was someone. It was a person, And I ran through the trees, and I found my way back out to the trail, and it was actually the last scout leader there on the trail, and it led me back to the cars and the context I knew, you know, a place where I could respond and knew how to act. And that's,
wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of a good metaphor for our people that have Huntington's. They kind of get into a kind of a lost zone.
They do. And that's really what I learned to be from my dad, was that flash of red, where I could bring him back to the trail, and he could function again. You know, he could move forward, and he knew how to operate. And you know, it could be something really small. You know, sometimes he would say, you know, how have you been? That was one of the things he would often ask me, how have you been? And I learned early on that the best answer to that was not simply good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that really didn't
wanted more. He wanted to be connected with you, right?
That's right. He needed more in order to have, you know, fertile soil, in order to have some structure to respond to. The doctors often talk about it as external structure. People with Huntington's disease, you know, can't organize things themselves. They really need a lot of help. And you know, if he said, how have you been? And I just said something as simple as, well, Dad, I've really been enjoying this tuna sandwich, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He could be like, well, you know, it is good. Like, thanks. Like, I'm glad to enjoy this with you. You know, you're
that
a good cook.
That would open up the conversation for you.
It really would.
It looks like we have a caller, or maybe several callers, to ask you questions. Do you mind if I break in just real quick to see if we have some callers?
Sure. I'm happy to take a call.
BJ, do we have callers today? Questions?
Give me one minute.
Okay. Well, this is definitely a metaphor for everyone, I'm sure, has experienced the same kind of situation where they kind of go into a shell, and it's kind of hard to draw them out. So it sounds like you've really been able to illustrate how to do that, and I think a lot of people need to learn some skills. And one of the things that I've noticed with your Father Spirit film is you've illustrated it. So, you know, there's some other things that we can talk about today, but maybe we need to maybe change gears with the questions and go right into the film and tell us why you did the film and how you were able to accomplish what you did.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that the film and my whole experience with my dad is really an extension of what we're talking about. You know, the ability to draw him out, you know, one thing led to another, and I realized that I was good at it. That it was something that, you know, he could respond to me, and that we could do things together, and that, you know, with me, he was able to do a lot more than he could do on his own in terms of thinking and noticing things about his environment and, you know, formulating ideas about them or, you know, going places. You know, he could, it opened up a whole new world for him. Mm-hmm. So we started to take trips together, and that was how it started. I took him down to Atlanta, and my mom was sort of struggling with his care because it entailed a great deal. And I was like, well, you know, like, Mom, why don't we just you know, give you some space, and I'll take Dad and spend some time down with my friends down there. So we took a trip, and we spent a month down there, and I was taking care of him, you know, in community down there, and it was a real success. You know, people encouraged me, and they told me that it had meant a lot to them to see us together, and you know, people recognized how I was able to you know, draw them out, and I was really encouraged by that. So it wasn't our first trip. You know, it wasn't our last trip. We took another one, and then, you know, I would kind of continue that rhythm of taking him out and going some places. And then, you know, he would spend some time back with my mom, and then, you know, I would go on, you know, on my own. But then I'd come back again, and I really kept Charlottesville as an orbit, and mm-hmm. and brought him out with me. So India was sort of the culmination of that rhythm.
Now, you had made other trips to India, so you had connections over there. Is that correct?
That's right, and that really made all the difference.
Okay.
My
What were your other trips like there?
Well, I first became involved with Agape India. It was a my friend. I lived with him for 3 months. Vikrant is his name,
uh-huh.
Vikrant Bhandari. And we had lived together in community as part of Hope Builders International. And that's they were doing a program which brought people from all over the world. And there were 7 Indians, 3 people from Bulgaria, Lebanon, Palestine, Jordan. They were all represented.
Wow.
And I really got on well with Vikrant. And he was doing some really incredible things in the high mountains. One of the things that really inspired me to get involved with his organization was a widow, someone who had lost her husband. She had a few kids, and she had gotten into an accident and actually broke her back.
Ouch.
So she was paralyzed, and there was no way that she was going to be able to recover from that without proper medical attention, which she had no way of seeking. So he went up there, and he got her. They had a jeep, and it was a long journey up into the mountains, but they brought her down, and she got some medical treatment and regained the ability to walk and recovered 100%. And as a result of that, you know, the family didn't lose the farm, the kids weren't destitute, and, you know, it really just totally transformed the experience of that family.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
So when I heard that they had sold the jeep, they had to sell the jeep for financial reasons, I really wanted to do something, and I wrote some letters and raised some money and spent some of my own and bought a motorcycle, which I then went to India and spent 4 months over there, traveling to some of these places and facility, you know, just working with Vikrant.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of the story behind how I ended up with a motorcycle in India.
Now, Vikram is your director producer for the film, right?
Well, they're brothers, Vikram and Vikrant.
That's right. Okay.
It's Bhikkhu and Babu and Vikram and Vikrant. It gets a little bit confusing. They both have two names, and not everyone can keep it straight. But his older brother, Vikram, I met as I was we had a brief overlap.
That's Bhikkhu.
Yeah, that's right. That's Bhikkhu.
Okay,
we'll go with Bhikkhu and Vikrant just to keep it simple. He and I spent some time together, and he'd been in Germany for the past 7 years working in film. And we hit it off, and we enjoyed, you know, each other's company. We had similar visions about what we wanted to see and, you know, what we wanted to show people.
Right.
And he had to go back to Germany for some time, but I ended up extending my stay and planned that a bit around when he would be returning. So we had a week overlap there at the end of my trip, and we shot some footage together, and we actually spent a lot of time with the sadhus, these religious holy men, and Ram Dass is someone I became friends with over there, and
wow.
It was it came out well. It looked sharp. So he really encouraged me to come back and work on a project with him. I just sort of took some time and thought about what the project ought to be, and.
Mm-hmm. Did he tell you
clear.
Pick the project, or?
I'm sorry.
Did he ask you to decide on a project or think about?
Oh well, yeah, he wanted me to come back and work on a project with him, and
okay.
Neither of us at that point, you know, had any convictions about what the project ought to be. We just knew we wanted to do something together.
Right.
And as I was driving back from the airport, I had flown from India, from Delhi to Washington, D.C., and I was driving back while I was in India the first time. My father had been placed in an assisted care facility a nursing home of sorts. And I was actually driving to the place for the first time. I'd never seen it before. And, you know, I was kind of mulling over these ideas about going back to India and working on a project. And, you know, it just struck me, you know, you should take your dad to India. That's what the project should look like.
So that was on your way back?
That was on my way back, yeah. And
wow.
I started talking with him about it right then. I just, you know, started asking him if, you know, he wanted to take another trip together.
Oh. Well, he had complete trust in you, too, and that makes a big difference, don't you think?
He did, and it made all the difference. You know,
right.
I don't know. It was hard for either of us to know exactly what the trip would look like. You know,
right.
we could only have so much of an idea, myself, and he could, you know, have less of a complete picture of what that would be. But, you know, he knew that it was a trip with me, and that's really,
right.
I think, in the end, that's all he needed to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me break in here just for a second. It's 15 minutes into the show already, believe it or not. You're listening listening to Help for HD. This is Melissa, your host, and our incredible special guest tonight is Jonathan Dickinson, epic documentary filmmaker of Father Spirit. Our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. We are recording live, but you may also listen again right after the end of the show. Jonathan's email is fatherspiritinfo@gmail.com. His website is fatherspirit.org. Is that right?
Com or org will work, actually.
Com or org. Okay. So please check out his website. And if you haven't seen Father Spirit on YouTube, just Google it and it'll come up. It's a beautiful display and illustration of this epic journey that you so eloquently illustrate in this film. I'm just amazed by it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about your pops. And you went to India. Where did you start out from?
We flew into Delhi on the 26th of August. And just getting to Dehradun, where my friends were, was a bit of a challenge. We had a train ticket, but as it turns out, you know, we never got off of the wait list. So we were posed with a problem right away. But the woman, we met this lady and as we were getting off of the airplane, and Ajala is her name, and she gave me her contact information. And fortunately, I did have some friends in Delhi.
Mm-hmm.
Shalim is a friend of mine who was also in this program, the Forge program, where I met Vikrant. And we went straight to his place and spent some time there. And then I touched base with Ajala, and she ended up actually providing a taxi from Delhi to Dehradun, which is about a 7-hour ride.
Oh,
and she and her husband, Chuck, just really made that happen for us in a really providential way. So we were blessed right there from the beginning with real providence.
That's crazy.
It was pretty wild. And, I mean, I could – so we went to Dehradun in the manner I mentioned. We took a shorter trip once we got there. Then my father and I went to Nepal for – we took a train and a rickshaw and a jeep and then a bus and a number of other vehicles in the mix there. I think it was 56 hours? No, I can't remember exactly. But
wow.
It was a lot of travel time there between Dehradun and Lake View in Pokhara, Nepal. But
now, were you filming this whole time, different segments?
Yes, different segments. We started filming as soon as we got to Dehradun. Actually, okay. I myself was filming with just sort of a handheld camera the whole journey from doorstep to doorstep, really. After we left, my car broke down on the way to the airport.
Oh no!
So that was really the first struggle.
Wow.
That. But
lots of obstacles.
It was. There's quite a few. Plenty of challenges. But so we filmed that sort of roughly, and then once we got to Dehradun, BQ started shooting with the real camera, and we shot that first trip and, you know, some things around Dehradun. And then on the way to Nepal, I picked up sort of the handheld again and did that on my own. And then after Nepal, I actually got Pop up into the air on a paraglider when we were in Nepal. He enjoyed that a lot.
Pop's wild adventure, huh?
That's right. Pops was flying. And believe it or not, my mom and my sister joined us for a time there in Nepal, and they went paragliding as well. So we had the whole family in the air.
Oh, that's wonderful. Did he really understand, do you think, that he was in India and that you were doing this thing?
He sure did.
Wow.
He was well aware, you know, that he was in India. And
now, I've heard you say on a number of occasions you have a victory cry. What is it?
We're doing this thing.
Yeah.
That was
I heard
victory
you say that
cry.
Quite a bit.
We would say that to each other often, you know, and he would sort of look at me sometimes and he would just be like, India, huh? And I would always love that, you know. He would say a lot. You know, he would, it meant a lot to me what he
sure
would
does.
Say.
Every victory is huge, right?
That's right. That's right. And one of the things
large
about Huntington's
small.
Disease is that they're not quite as able to, you know, express everything that they're experiencing.
Right.
But, you know, those glimmers, that was special.
Getting back to drawing them out, drawing you were very successful in drawing your father out and, into the experience. And how did you do that?
Well, you know, I would talk about something that he could get his head around. You know, I mentioned earlier, you know, food. That was a big one. You know, if he would say, how have you been? You know, you could just talk about, well, I've been thinking about getting something to eat. You know, are you hungry? And then he'd be like, yeah, you know, I'd love to eat something. You know, that's one of the things. They can tell you, you know, people who have Huntington's disease are very capable of telling you how they're, you know, whether or not they're hungry, whether or not they're cold,
right.
If they're hot. You know, if you say, are you doing okay, that doesn't really give them as much of a context. But if you really root it in something that's immediately observable, then they can give you yes or no answers almost, you know, right up until the end. Dad never got to a point where, you know, he couldn't answer those kinds of questions. And
living in the now, basically.
Yeah, and
right.
Just finding a way to tap in. It's not always something as dramatic as taking a trip to India. It can be the smaller thing as helping them recognize that they're enjoying what they're eating. And I would really encourage everyone out there who's got a loved one with this disease to really weight that. You know, if you can just get them to say or to recognize something that's in their environment, something that they're experiencing, you know, that's as huge a victory as taking someone to India. Maybe even more so because it's the first step on that journey of drawing someone out.
Wow, that's inspirational for sure. I know toward the end of the journey, your pops was becoming weaker, and that must have been more difficult for you. How did you cope with that?
That was a challenge. I'd have to say that you know, as we left with more stimulation, with more things going on, it really, you know, Dad really got up for it. You know, he really rose to the occasion. And I think that the best I'd seen him doing in years was that taxi cab ride that Ajala got us and that Chuck and Ajala made happen. We talked about a lot of things on that ride. And, you know, he was really present and really conversant. And I remember him saying that, you know, he was looking forward to working with me on this project. And we actually have a few clips on camera where he's like, this is good, son. You're you're a good producer, son. You know, I'm really looking forward to working with you on this. And,
That's great.
And we talk about what a blessing it was to me,
yeah,
and what a blessing it was to him, and he called it the old double whammy was the word he used. And I was like, well, Pop, you know, maybe this time it'll even be a triple whammy because we can share it with people too. And he was
That's cool.
Wow.
Well,
so that was initially though, you know, and I have to be honest though, you know, as time went on and, you know, we were doing a lot of stuff which was demanding, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I think that towards the end of the trip, his functioning exhibited a real downward trend, and I think he just got worn out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was harder. That was
I love your philosophy about living from the heart and each day is a gift, and that's so true. How, can you tell us what gives you the strength to live each day that way? Because that's kind of an attitude, you know.
Well, I think that it's the best alternative. You know, we don't have really any other options. It's just a way of being that really opens a richer experience for ourselves as well. You know, it's not as if there's something you're giving up in order to do that. Or I should say, the things that you're giving up are lesser things than that which is opened by you know, just going for it and not worrying about the consequences so much. It's if you count the cost of every, you know, possible difficulty, you're never gonna leave your house.
Right. Well, you are such an incredible inspiration to all of us, and you've accomplished a lot, so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
What is next for you? What's going on with your speaking engagements? Are you entering the film in festivals?
Yeah, there's a lot of work left to do. The next thing on the radar that's an actual event is going to be the 24th of February, the Thursday after this coming. I'm going to be speaking at the it's a Friends of Scouting breakfast, and last year they celebrated 100 years of scouting, and John Grisham actually came out and delivered that presentation. And
right.
It was it was a big deal, the big, you know, 100 years. So I guess this will be the 101st year, and I'm excited to share what I've been working on, and you know, I'm really looking forward to how sort of explaining how that pertains to my experience in scouting, because it was really, that was the time where Dad and I were doing this sort of do-si-do in terms of our
mm-hmm.
changing roles. You know, we moved from a place where I always looked to him to a place where he became really reliant on me. And,
yeah.
you know, the Boy Scouts is such a parallel thing because, you know,
kind
when
of
I
a realignment,
there,
isn't it?
It is a realignment. It
yeah.
is a realignment. And it's something we all do. You know, all of our parents will at some point, you know, no one makes it out of life alive. And more often
right.
than not, towards you know, the winter season, that that changes, and they look to us. And
well, how can we support your efforts? Your website is fatherspirit.com or org, and your website has a support this film tab, so we can make donations there, right? And you aren't needing donations.
That's right. The finishing costs are pretty extensive. We're trying to really give this thing the you know, really give it a college try, and
right.
everything that entails is you know, it all has an expense associated with it. So
right, we're getting ready to go off the live portion of the show right now. Is there anything else you want to add?
Oh gosh, the time went by very quickly, didn't
it? No, didn't it? Now, folks, we're going to be continuing to record after the live session goes off, so please tune back in. Give it about an hour and tune back in, because we are going to be discussing a little bit more. But we just want to thank everyone for tuning in. Thank you for an awesome show, Jonathan. You may email jonathan@fatherspiritinfo@gmail.com and me at helpforhd@yahoo.com. And don't forget to click follow on the site for email reminders of upcoming shows. We have some very inspiring shows in the month of February. All all about new HD films. Welcome your comments and requests for additional information. Good night, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to Help for HD. Okay. We're off already. Can you believe that?
Wow. I can hardly believe
that.
That was
fast, isn't it?
That was so fast.
Yes. So we didn't talk about a lot of different things. The main point being, you know, drawing your pop out, and that was, I think, covered pretty well. Your metaphor was covered pretty well. But what I wanted to ask you is what was the impact of this experience on your life? How did that impact you?
Well, I mean, it's in some ways, you know, almost unnecessary to separate out the trip specifically from the overall relationship between my father and I. You know, that's I think the thing that has really had a huge impact on my life. But I guess I would say that it's been a real privilege in terms of the trip itself to be able to share, you know, that experience.
Right.
To be able to draw people into that and maybe draw them out as well.
Right. It's all about drawing out, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Whether you have HD or not, you know.
Right.
It's
kind of
like
coming
out of your shell.
It's not HD specific. There's no question about it. You know, sharing life together and you know, really, there's a certain vulnerability associated with that, which I think we shy away from. You know, to really speak about our, you know, our inner life is scary, and
mm-hmm.
and it entails a certain risk and trust, but it's so worth it because it allows us to. I mean, that's what life really is relationships and that web that we're a part of. The more we give to that, the more fully we get to do this thing.
Yeah, pretty good stuff. Would you do this again, or what would you do differently if you had it to do over again, or would you? I don't know.
I mean, I would do it again in a second. I think that if I had you know, a chance to do things differently, I guess maybe one of the things I would try to be more rigorous about is structuring it such that we didn't have sort of bars we had to jump in order to be successful. I knew going into it that, you know, we had to make it to the airplane on time. You know, there were certain hard limits and certain things that were required of us.
Right.
And I knew that was going to be the case for going over.
I remember seeing in one of your clips, you were talking about your dad saying something like, "Well, I can just lay down," and you said, "No, you can't." You know, like
right.
you had to
that
be
was,
somewhere or go somewhere.
Well, actually, that was a situation which was kind of graphic, really. I mean, he had while he was over there.
I just lost my connection. I don't know. Darn
did
it.
You?
Yeah. I don't know what happened. Let me see if I can pick it up again, but I think we're not on the air anymore. But let's keep talking anyway, just in case.
I thought you were down here, so I think we're okay.
Are we okay because you're on? Oh, thank God. Okay,
yeah.
Stay on, BJ, because otherwise we'll lose the connection.
I got a question, too. So before you guys hang up, let me throw a question out your way, but continue.
Thank you.
Okay, sweet.
Anyway,
well,
I'm sorry, Johnson.
I'll finish that one thought. It was you know, he had he'd gotten a little bit, well, he had become incontinent while we were over there.
Right.
And the situation was one where we needed to get him a shower because he was dirty. And, you know, he wanted to lay down. And I was like, "No, there's clean sheets on the bed. You know, you're not going to lay down when you've got poo on you. It's just not going to happen, Pop. You know, there's certain rules." And that was a situation where, you know, he couldn't rest because of that reason. But there were also times where, you know, we had to get, like, I can remember one time specifically where there was actually some some friction between sort of the team and I. We had a team of 9 people at one point, and, you know, we thought that there were guest houses, and there were guest houses all along the way that we would be able to stop at. But because of the time of year, it was a little bit later, and we ended up having to go late into the night and really push ourselves to get to somewhere where we could have a place where we could rest. And if I were to do it again, I would be more rigorous about really being clear about what our requirements were, mm-hmm. and that they weren't going to demand more of Pop than he was able to do. And I myself, you know, because that, mm-hmm. remember that night, you know, we ended up riding sort of 4 hours into the dark, and it was cold, and then we finally got there, and that whole night, Pop didn't sleep very well, so I didn't really get to sleep much that night at all. And then the next day, you know, we had to ride again, and it was just that kind of situation where I stretched myself to my limit. You know, I stretched him to his limit, and I had been planning on, you know, structuring it such that we weren't putting ourselves in those situations, but mm-hmm. I probably could have done a better job about being rigorous on that front, and that's something I would definitely correct if I were to do it again.
Okay, Beach, you got a question there?
Yeah, just, you know, pretty general, Jonathan, but, you know, what advice or thoughts do you have for others out there who have a parent with Huntington's and are, you know, maybe they aren't looking to do any as extreme as, you know, taking a trip to India, but, you know, even hanging out with their, you know, their parent or their friend with Huntington's disease, you know, what kind of recommendation would you give to them? And you've kind of explained it in what you've got out of the trip, but, you know, what advice or, you know, what kind of motivation would you give to others who may be a little hesitant to hang out with their parent or hang out with their loved one because they have Huntington's?
I would say, you know, one of the things that really gets in the way of doing stuff, of going out and doing things, is that sometimes, you know, people aren't comfortable with you know, the people in the environment don't know how to field it. They don't know how to respond to someone who has Huntington's disease. And I would encourage everyone who's in this position that, you know, if somebody's thrown off by it, that's okay. That's not your fault, and you don't have to be embarrassed about that. You know, if somebody else is uncomfortable, that's their problem, and
mm-hmm.
you don't have to take
exactly.
that upon yourself. You know, it's what you're doing by taking someone out. I remember how much my dad would love to just go out to eat, and he had a few friends who would come and take him out, you know, every Tuesday or every Wednesday or whichever day they took, and that meant so much to him. That was such a boon. He would look forward to that. And I remember, you know, how much of a difference in his whole week that would make. And I would focus on what you're doing in that light and not worry about how other people might not know how to respond to that situation. And this actually has a good parallel, which I'm really excited to that I thought of this. It's when we went to India, people in India who are disabled often don't they aren't in the public sector. People are probably hidden away a great deal more in India who are sick or disabled in some
yeah.
way than they are here in the States. And people, you know, would look at my dad and I, and they were kind of confused, and you know, some people probably were thinking, oh, what is he doing out here? You know, he should be somewhere in a hospital, or he should be, you know, somewhere in a house, and he doesn't have any business being out here. And I remember actually one person sort of accused us and was vehement in their mm-hmm. sort of like accusations of that you know that we were not in the right place. And and I think he actually went and talked to the police, and it came to a head. And this guy's name was Shikhar. And I confronted him on it because he didn't know, you know, he was not of the right opinion. He wasn't coming at it from the right perspective. And the thing that made all the difference was how people approached it. And what's neat is that after a while, this folklore, this legend came to the fore, and that's the legend of Shubham Kumar. And Shubham Kumar was this mythological character who had taken his father and his mother through India on his back on this quest. And it's amazing how people did a 180 once they had that context to draw on. Once they understood it as Shubham Kumar, they were celebrating what we were doing. They were excited about what was going on. And we even got written up in one of these, the India newspaper, which has a pretty huge circulation. They put us on the front page as the American Shubham Kumar, and really celebrated it. And that's what people need to think about who were struggling with taking their parents out or, you know, embarrassed, and that's the perspective that the audience ought to have in mind, you know, and that's the perspective that we can allow them to step into. It's a different world from this other idea which we kind of become self-conscious and gravitate towards.
That's beautiful. I think even in India they're looking at things a little different maybe too now because of this.
Yeah. Certainly.
Wow.
Certainly. And so it's, I mean, I'm just, that's the best I can do to answer that question of
right.
what we can do. I would just say weight the things that are right. You know, weight the opinions that come from the right place. And
right.
the ones that don't, well, they don't matter.
Right. That is true.
That's great, John. Thanks. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Beej. I'm glad you asked that question. Thank you.
Where did you come up with the title of the film?
Well, you know, that just kind of came to me. I think that it's what we want to say about this sort of notion of drawing someone out, of leading someone. Of being a father to someone is there in that notion. You know, the spirit of my father, the spirit that taught me how to be who I am, or that taught me, you know, what it means to be a man. You know, that was something my father did for me for a time.
Yeah.
And it was really sort of that spirit, that idea of my dad, were he well, which told me to go to India with him. You know, that conception of that idea, that the spirit of that notion.
Mm-hmm.
That's what.
And you said your dad was a prayer warrior.
That's right. That's right. He would often talk about being a prayer warrior. That
uh-huh.
was one of the things he would say often. So.
What are some of the other of your favorite of his things that come to mind?
Well, you know, when sometimes he would say, "How have you been?" and I would answer that with, you know, "I've been struggling with this. I've been you know, hopeful about this matter or that." And you know, sometimes he would that would give him a context, and he would be able to speak into that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it wouldn't, and he didn't, and he would just say, "How have you been again?" And that
mm-hmm.
was kind of hard to rally and not be disappointed by that. But other times, you know, he would say, "We'll pray about it."
Well,
and that was one of the things he would respond with often. And sometimes you kind of wondered, like, is he really praying? Is he you know, is that actually going on? You know. But
just the act of saying it is giving it up to God, right?
That's right. That's right. And he was, mm-hmm. and that, you know, it was the best prayer there could have been. And and he would say that. And eventually, I finally really embraced that wholeheartedly. That
mm-hmm.
that, you know, he was rooting for me. he was in my corner.
Right.
You know, he had my best interest at heart, and he was hopeful about whatever it was I would share. You know, he was for me.
That's awesome. Now, you're going to be entering the film in some festivals. Which ones, or all of them?
Well, some of them won't allow you to submit your film if you've already screened it other places or submitted it to more than two or three other, you know, international festivals, or I think screened it or gone to festivals. So Sundance is probably the one we're looking at as sort of the first priority. We were hoping for Cannes, but the submission date for that is less than a month away, and we have a great deal of work left to do. So we're not going to be able to make that deadline, but Sundance is what we're shooting for now.
Uh-huh. Now, are you going to have a special viewing of the film once you're done with all this, or?
Yeah, once we're done with the festival circuit, we will, you know, have screenings wherever, you know, people encourage us to do it, and you know, we're hopeful that will be, you know, quite a season where we take it to you know, different places, and we're able to share some things about.
And what's your timeline looking like right now?
We're hoping for you know, to finish it during the spring, and that's our goal.
Need some money though, right?
Yeah, we definitely do. We need some money. That's true. We have a great deal of finishing costs that we've been able to do most of it on credit. You know, it's been a labor of love in a lot of ways for a lot of people, but the rubber's going to meet the road real soon here. And if we don't get some cold hard cash, we're going to stall out a little bit. So that's something I've been
that happens a lot,
about.
I'm sure.
So I know
Dad's
out
there,
so.
Open up your pocketbooks, please. Oh gosh. Well, is there anything else that you can think of that you'd like to share about our show today? And
I think we've covered a lot of ground, and I'm glad that we've been able to talk about the things we have.
So drawing out is important, and do you think others can learn how to do that as well?
I sure do. There's no question. It's not always intuitive, but I think the more excited we become about the possibility, the more likely we are to pursue it. So I would definitely encourage people to really become passionate about that, and to really, you know, celebrate the times that it happens. Even if you can just get you know someone to say, "This is a good sandwich. I'm enjoying it," or whatever it is, you know, that is a victory, and should be seen as such.
Every victory is huge.
Amen.
Wonderful show, Jonathan. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Melissa.
And
thank
I
you
hope
so
that
for having me on.
I hope that you have some good feedback from it, and that you're welcome to, you know, use the link to your show on all of your outreach materials, whatever you want to do.
I appreciate that. I'll be sure.
Another thing that's possible is Blog Talk Radio has a widget, so if you're interested in putting that into anything, you also have that possibility. It's right on the front page. It says add this player to your website, and it gives you three different possibilities for widgets, and that's
okay. I'll look into that, and the link is will definitely be helpful. If you could actually just shoot me that link that you were mentioning earlier, the one that would go, I think you
directly
said it would have a couple different links on it, or had a.
It's each individual show has its own link, because once it's recorded, it's archived.
Right.
So once we get off the air here, I'll give it about an hour, and then I can go back in, grab your link, and send it to you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Great.
And
yeah,
then right on the front Blog Talk Radio page is a little link. It's right underneath the Blog Talk Radio box where you click on to play. It's right underneath it says add this player to your website. I don't know if that's something that you'd like to do or would want to do, but it's an option. And, you know, literally anybody could have their own Blog Talk Radio show. It's, you know, it's very comprehensive how they've laid it out. You can have a free show. You can have a, you know, a paid show. It's completely your prerogative. So I happen to want to do one each week because there's just so many people like yourself who are doing wonderful, inspirational things to help our HD people that I just wanted to share it with as many people as I could that want to, you know, listen. So we've got over 3,600 listeners total now, and it's just growing every week. So I know the information is going out there to someone. I don't know who. You know, I don't know exactly who is getting the information. I do have listeners and friends on the Blog Talk Radio page. So if you're, you know, listening, click on follow, and I'll know who you are then. So I know who the audience is. It's really nice to know who you are. But thank you again for a wonderful show, and I'll be watching, and we'll stay in touch, and good luck with all of your endeavors.
Okay. I wanted to wish my sister a happy birthday. It's her birthday today. I don't know if
happy birthday.
She'll catch the recording or not, but happy birthday, Jenny, and I wanted to say hi to Crystal, too. So we'll leave it with that. It was great talking with you, Melissa.
BJ, did you have anything else?
That'll do it. Have a good one, guys. Thanks,
awesome.
Jonathan.
Thank you.
You're
goodbye,
very
guys.
Welcome. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Talk soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.